What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday. So I moved aside and I went to a state that you spent some time in recently, a state that I want to spend a lot more time in, frankly. And that is pure Michigan. We can do an
Q3 is the quarter of triage. This is where can I not play in 3 months, you know?
That's exactly right.
Muirfield, you dropped Muirfield earlier, Muirfield Village. Best bacon I've ever had. People talk about the milkshakes. Thick, a little bit of crisp, and peppery as hell, which is just like, that is how you create alpha in the bacon world.
I don't even think I dropped Muirfield. I just think you wanted to talk about the
milkshakes. No, you did. You mentioned bacon. You did. You mentioned Muirfield.
How was it out there today?
It was wonderful. Well, Tilly in Texas, which is kind of like, you know, not very well-known knowledge. So this is Oak Hills Country Club in San Antonio, Tilly original. And then Brook Hollow in Dallas as well is also a Tilly. Brook Hollow is, it's just on a, I don't know, it's a better piece of property. It's bigger. Andrew Green worked on it a couple of years ago. It just feels like there's more that was put into it. But it was, this place was awesome. Like the house theory just through the roof. So many great live oaks, great rolling piece of property. You just felt like you were in the Texas Hill Country, which is so good, you know?
How were the Kandidis?
Compared to the shit I play here in Austin, public golf, got out with a listener yesterday in Austin, which was just wonderful. And it's just, you know, like not very good stuff. Like it wasn't even that bad relative to what you'll often see. And, that basically means that from 7 feet, you could conceivably make a putt. But like I played last weekend and it was, you weren't making a putt. And I'm not trying to be like, you know, hyperbolic there. Like we're talking greens rolling five and like 20% grass coverage, like just an objectively tough scene. But what about you? Stream song this weekend, red, blue, and black.
Yeah, it was good. I got the full tour, you know, Gil, Doak, and Corin Crenshaw. Similar vibe on the greens, like very resorty, very healthy, very 9.5 on the stimp. So you did get a couple slopes that just didn't work the way that they looked like they should. Outside of that, it was really cool. And, you know, I was going back through and I was like, man, I really haven't played that many of Doak's designs. I played a few and the distance between them is pretty big. But it was cool to play them all side by side. I mean, arguably three of the most influential golf course architecture groups, at least in our lifetime. And to see them side by side by side was pretty cool. So, yeah, it was great. Loved it.
You mentioned Corin Crenshaw. Last thing before we get into the dirt. Another friend of the show sent me a text yesterday or 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. Ben Crenshaw sighting in, I don't know, Golf Galaxy, like whatever golf store people still go to in Austin, because he couldn't find Golf Pride original corded grips at Austin Golf Club.
Yeah.
Out there buying his own grips. Just legendary stuff.
That's really funny. My dad actually had a similar experience last week. Wanted cords, couldn't get cords, went over to a Golf Galaxy and brought him back to the club. So looks like we got to look
David
into that.
David Simas and Ben Crenshaw, you know,
what's going on insane. What's going on with the courts? They're big courts struggling. So we got to figure that one out. Mudball Monday, episode 125. Joined here by Henry Shimp, Walker Simas here. How you doing? How's the week been?
Week's been good. I mean, we just hit on it. We'll get into it in the dirt. Little Buc-ee's this morning, a travel day down to San Antonio. Excited to talk some Kandidis. It was a good week in professional golf. I'll use my thinking for that. No more. But
okay.
The week's been good. So yeah, let's hit it. How about you start us off with the dirt?
Cool. Drinking, I mean, tons of water. It was hot. It was really hot in you can't really call it South Florida. We'll just call it Central Florida just to be safe. But windy, really hot, and plenty of water to keep me going. Plenty of salt, and of course, plenty of cold beer to keep me in check. So that was kind of the vibe this week. Eating wise, they do a good job, like a really good job at the comfort stations. I don't know if that's kind of an egregious term here, but comfort stations.
It is, but that's okay.
Yeah, we just hammer it over the head. Pork sliders, lots of tacos. I love the two biter. I mean, give me 3 2-biter tacos and send me on my way, and I'll be a happy guy. And then Lara bars kind of kept me through. I don't think I've given Lara bars proper shout out on a Mudball Monday. Just everything you want in a bar, and nothing you don't want. Big fan. I have been for a long time. I mean, that's kind of what I ate all through competitive golf days. Reading wise, finished up, really enjoyed writing that article the last couple of weeks. I'd been working on that Willie Park Jr. piece for quite a bit. And, it was like when I started the series, I thought, the whole purpose really was to do a digestible piece, something that you could read in 5 or 6 minutes, put together some knowledge on some of the golf course architects that help frame, the architecture that we're so interested in. And the early people in these series, Old Tom Morris, James Braid, Willie Park Jr., are people that, frankly, there's not a lot on them that is easily accessible. And so I spent way more time than I expected, researching and writing this article and dove into some Golf Club Atlas stuff. You would think the listeners of the tie would think that I would spend, 6 or 7 hours a week on Golf Club Atlas reading chats, and I don't really never have. I dip in there from time to time. And
Those
man,
aren't
I just,
chats, those are wars.
dude, it's incredible how fiery guys get. That's kind of where I was going with it, Henry, is, like history is critically important. It really is. It's an important thing to be serious about and to hold people accountable when they get stuff wrong. But I just found it hilarious how worked up guys got over, let's be honest, history that is fairly inconsequential relative to other readings. And so it was funny. I spent so much time on there dipping into stuff and picked up some really interesting bits about Willie Park Jr. and Maidstone. In fact, I'm going to order one of those books. Maidstone produces a book that probably has the most, in terms of just bulk knowledge on Willie Park Jr. And so I ordered that and look forward to reading it and really look forward to continuing that series for two reasons. A, because I've learned a lot, and B, because it's going to keep getting easier and easier and easier to find stuff on these guys. So that was kind of my reading this week. Tell you what, episode 122 of Mudball Monday, we covered caddies, kind of a SWOT analysis on caddies. And not that I take back anything that I said or we said on that Mudball Monday episode, but I want to shout out BD, Brian Doyle. He was a recommendation from Matt Galloway, friend of the pod, and he caddied for me and my dad all 3 rounds out at Stream Song this weekend. And it was just like true professional shit. It was grade A. It was so fucking good. He was the best. So if you're going to Stream Song, go search out BD. Great guy. Really, really. He made it just so easy to have a good time. Picked up so much knowledge about Stream Song. I mean, he was like pulling me off to the side, showing me where they, mined the sand to build out all the bunkers and where they threw all the trash. And, walking along this fairway, he's like, man, they buried tractors and pipes under 10 feet under this fairway. It was awesome. So really, really enjoyed that. And that'll wrap up my quick dirt for the week. What you got?
Yeah, so on the drinking front, of course, you got to talk about friends over at Good Walk Coffee. It was an early morning, and the time change. This is the losing of the hour. So I touch on this in my reading, but I stayed up too late last night reading. What a sad thing for a 26-year-old to be saying on a Saturday night. But it is what it is. It wasn't going to get enough sleep anyway, and then of course you lose the hour. So it was time for a hammer of Good Walk. Fortunately, I had some medium dark on hand, as well as the Mudball half calf, but it was not a Mudball half calf morning. And we've been talking about it. The new blend is on its way. We are going dark. We're going zero dark 30 on the new roast. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for more information there. And then the other thing to comment on is everyone knows that I'm a sparkling water guy. The building that I work in has on the 3rd and 15th floor, they're kind of, tenant lounge areas. It's actually a golf simulator that I have discovered and been spending way too much time in on the 15th floor, but that's beside the point. there's a, you know, like a fancy sort of water filter on each floor as well. One of the things being a sparkling water. So I'm probably downing, you know, 75 to 100 ounces of sparkling water on a daily basis on my general work days. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it just simply is what it is. And I'll use that to roll right into my eating. Hell of an eating day, just Texas eating at its finest. 6:45 a.m. Buc-ee's, had to do it. There's a rule in Texas, like you can't pass a Buc-ee's and not eat something. It just simply has to be done. This is the biggest Buc-ee's I've ever seen also. And I'm like, I get it. Buc-ee's are big in general. This one down in New Braunfels between Austin and San Antonio. I mean, there had to have been 80, 100 different gas outlets, whatever you call it. Like, obscene how big this thing was. Brisket taco, always. And just kept it simple. Bacon, egg, and cheese taco, brisket taco, sparkling water, and we're good to go. Only thing I don't like about Buc-ee's, they don't carry Topo, which I don't understand. That's a tough scene. Buc-ee's always hits. Played some golf, as we talked about at Jump. And then for lunch, Curry Boys Barbecue, San Antonio. If anyone ever goes to San Antonio, couple time James Beard Award finalist. I'm hoping they get over the hump this year because they fucking deserve it. Just like one of the most satisfying 18-minute eating experiences I've had. So I had this like cabbage and cucumber kind of pickly situation, you know, like a cucumber cabbage slaw of sorts that, of course, was just laced with nuoc chom. I mean, can you imagine? And then the bowl that I had. So basically the angle here is it's rice. It's some sort of curry. They change it up a little bit. So there's like a chicken thigh that has yellow curry. The one that I had was brisket with green curry. There's a Penang curry. And then they crush the cilantro. There were some crushed onions on there. And yes, the brisket was fantastic. I'm sure all the other meats would have been great as well. Big brisket day. But what made this so satisfying is like, you're going to have some bites of rice that it's just like simple rice. You're going to have some where you're getting a little bit of curry. You're having a lot of cilantro. You get the crunch from the crispy onions. But by the time you finish the meat, like a lot of the time when you're eating a rice dish, I mean, I finish everything I eat, but you're like, I don't really want to just eat plain rice. But you've got rice sitting there in this fucking green curry that was a little bit spicy as well. Just like not only a balance of flavors, but throughout the course of this meal, like by the time you get to the end, you're just as satisfied as when you're eating some nice brisket at the beginning. So just absolutely awesome. They got like 9 things on the menu, you know, that sort of joint, just great stuff. I really wish I had somebody else there with me because it would have been great to sample one of the other bowls as well. Maybe you just call me soft and I should have done it anyway. But that's enough on the eating front. Curry Boys Barbecue, just fantastic stuff. Moving on to my reading. So as I mentioned, finished up last night with the David Faraday book. Really solid action. John Feinstein did a great job with that one. I love in the epilogue how he was very clear about like how serious he took that book, like getting the opportunity to biograph, if that's a word or proper pronunciation, David Faraday. That was like a really serious thing to him, and he did a great job. So I thoroughly enjoyed that book, and I'm moving on to a memoir. I've been very clear about how much I enjoy memoirs, autobiographies, by Stephen A. Smith. So, that's going to be interesting. I'm very, very curious as to what his writing style will be like, or potentially lack thereof, who knows, but, I'm a big Stephen A. Smith fan. I mean, he just has always made sports talk fun and interesting. And I think
if he did the audiobook, he would be great on an audiobook.
That would be great. I think he's a dude that like, it's by and large an act in a lot of ways, not fully, but I think he's like a kindred spirit to Gordon Ramsay, you know, like Gordon Ramsay kind of comes off as this like dipshit chef. He's like an unbelievably good chef. I think Stephen A. Smith is kind of the same thing. It's very much a bit, as you put it. I think he's actually a really smart dude when you see him just sit there and like actually break stuff down. So looking forward to reading them. Thinking, mentioned pro golf, big week in pro golf. I mean, I was tracking my live boy, not my live boys, but tracking the live boys all week. I don't know if I've announced this yet, but I am no longer a goat. Have I told you this?
No, please do.
Yeah, I'm not about the goats anymore. I talked last week about how big of an AK fan I am, and seeing as if he's a free agent, I mean, I'm riding solo. Like I'm riding with AK. There's not another team that really sticks out to me. it would maybe be like Legion 13 a little bit. I take some interest there with Surratt, but I don't have a team. I'm an AK guy. No more goats. And yeah, so AK 6 over out of the first round, 2 over second round. You know, I mentioned I stayed up late last night. I will be honest. I threw on a bit of the broadcast. I just needed to do it. And AK, baby, 5 under today.
Yeah.
I mean, he is coming. So really exciting to see that. And then on the PGA Tour side, great event this week at the API. I mean, tough, really, really tough golf course. I can tell it kind of pisses the guys off. Like some of the interviews after, they were kind of like, yeah, these greens, they're kind of just dead at this point, but it is what it is. You know, I didn't hear anything too spicy, but I could tell that these guys, you know, they don't love playing at Bay Hill. But Scheffler, man, I mean, on that golf course, 15 under, 6-shot win. It's not even remotely surprising the way he's been hitting the ball. Like, I think we've all been talking about this. I haven't looked up the stats yet, but I would not be surprised to see that he was, you know, 23rd in the field in strokes game putting this week. But it's like, if that's where he is just going to beat people by 6 shots. He's finished in the top 10 over his career so far. What do you think his percentage is of top 10 finishes?
I mean, it's got to be close to 5 or above 5.
What's 41.
It's at 41% top 10.
41% across his PGA Tour career. Cat was 53. So, you know, not as many wins in there. And
that's a bit of an Icarus.
Anytime we start talking
there.
Cat, you know, we should not talk Cat, but crazy. So, hey, we're coming into the important part of the year. And Scotty, you know, seems if the ball striking is obscene and if the putting is just even half decent, this is what we're going to see. So, we needed this week. We, you know, everyone's been talking about like, the stars haven't been starring. It's just kind of been a tough scene out on the PGA Tour. We needed some good stuff. And, you know, it was just a gun show this week. So a lot of fun there. All right, long dirt. I'll toss it to you to talk about what we're talking about today.
Dude, I swear. So I wanted to talk grasses today, but I felt that would be a little boring. Tough thumbnail. You know, tough to grab somebody with a thumbnail you're talking grasses. So we're talking.
I mean, it depends on what grass you're talking about. You probably could catch some eyes with peculiar grass.
I'm sure you could. You get like a smoke shop vibe going. That would be a fun project. Instead,
get some zoysia rolled up in there. That would have to rock.
I might do that anyway. But we're going to be talking Kandittis today. I mean, we're going to be really the goal here is we're going to be heat mapping the best conditioning in every quarter of the year. And so I'll take Q1 and Q3 and Henry will take Q2 and Q4. And we're just going to look at where do you go in each, you know, quarter of the year when seeking out fun, exciting conditions. And I think splitting it off Q1, Q3, Q2, Q4 gives us each one quarter where you're kind of sectioned off to one part of the U.S. By the way, we are keeping this within the U.S. today. Just, I feel like you can just cheat if you allow yourself to go all around the world. You could just stick with warm season grasses and be done with it. But we're going to keep it inside the U.S. today. You kind of have one quarter where you're sectioned off to part of the U.S. And I think the other, you know, Q2, Q3 can pretty much do anything with. So this should be exciting. The main goal here is we're going to start off with just a general location. I don't want to get too in the weeds on like, hey, we're taking this trip. They need to be 20 minutes apart. This is much less about logistics as it is, hey, you know, this is where the good conditions are at this point in the year. Talk about a few golf courses each and then, you know, any necessary or unnecessary context to ignite perhaps your next golf trip. So I'll get us started with Q1. And I thought that, you know, what a better way to start off Mudball Monday, the crux of it, than starting with some recency bias. I thought long and hard about this one. And, you know, we've done a lot of talking and thinking and playing for that matter in Dormant Bermuda at the end of the year in 23 and beginning of 24. And we've talked a lot about how great that playing surface can be when you have a base of sand and you know, some good thinking has gone into that. But then, you know, I thought about Pinehurst and I thought about Aiken. I was like, everybody knows about Pinehurst and Aiken, you know, is heavy private right now. I think there's going to be some more stuff built out around Aiken, but just didn't feel like that was adding a whole lot of value. But We played Cabot Citrus a couple weeks ago. I just got off of Stream Song. I really enjoyed my playing experience at both. The conditions, you're both resort courses, not perfect. As I said, off the show, and we were kind of getting into it here, that you're seeing a lot of 9.5 green speeds, and you've definitely got some slopes and some crazy ones at that, where the ball is not rolling back the way you should, the way you would think that it would.
I mean, in
And
fairness to Cabot Citrus, they are still in preview play.
of
So
course.
you'll see that, probably take a tick up here over the next 3, 4 months.
Correct. And Henry, taking that a few steps further, I mean, the shaping out there at times is so wild that if you dialed it up another 3 feet, you would wish that it was the way that it is now. And
Correct.
I've heard, and I believe the target is to kind of keep them around that 9.5, just to keep people sane and want people to, come back. So let's talk about everything else, tee to green. Whether you go to Cabot Citrus, whether you go to Stream Song, or whether you go to both, you've got 39 holes with more on the way at Cabot Citrus. You've got 72 holes plus at Stream Song. You can really screw around at Black if you want to for quite a while. And it's all on sandy ground. What a wonderful place to start. I think, you've got a lot of short mo, which is a trend that we've seen a lot of. But until you get paired up with a couple guys and you see really how wide the dispersion can be at times, it is of such value to have, at times shared fairways and lots of short mo grass so that people can spray their balls wherever and not worry about finding it. I mean, it's such a mental hassle, such a an energy add to just go searching for balls all day. And over the course of those, nearly 100 holes that I played over the last couple of weeks, and I hit some squirrely ones, believe that. I never really had to go searching too far for a golf ball. You know what else it creates is just this opportunity to hit some wild golf shots where you get out of position and you can find it. You just have to hit a 30-yard hook, and that in and of itself is pretty fun. The other thing that I love about sandy turf is that even if the grass is not mown, like it is at the Memorial, just super tight, like guys are walk mowing 60 yards short of the green, you still get that bounce that you want. You can still drive a 9 iron in there and give it a couple bounces before it really stops. And I think that's all we're looking for when it comes to turf. So why Florida? I feel like, January, February, March, like you're just, if you live in the Carolinas, you've kind of already got that dormant Bermuda vibe anyway. If you live in Texas, if you live in Oklahoma, you kind of already got that thing. And so to me, it was between Florida and California, really. Don't really see anywhere else you could go. And this was more of a temperature play on my end. It's like, get down south, sweat a little bit, bounce some 7 irons into some greens, feel confident throwing a wedge into the ground, and not have it just, rip up a bunch of muddy turf. And to me, that's what it's all about. So that's kind of my round one, Q1. Anything to add on or bounce back off of Q1?
Well, you mentioned, stuff that's not important would probably pop up in this episode. How sad is it that I was talking to another friend about this recently, that we officially have reached kind of the age slash stage of life where we talk in quarters, like it's just a tough scene. Like I was talking to some friends out in San Francisco recently, and it's like, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna make Q1, but maybe Q2, push into Q3, and we're sitting here talking about, testing out our livers late on Friday nights. It's like, yeah, Q3 is when I think that can happen. I'm like, God bless. Like, we're just getting way too old here, speaking in quarters. No, I agree with you though. Florida's the play. I mean, just it was stupid when we played at Pine Tree 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was like 80 degrees, wearing shorts, nice and hot. And the grass had, it looked like it was late August when it's just almost like a little bit too burnt out. Not too burnt out, beautifully burnt out, but like green with the beautiful like shade of yellow, it's like what is it, hint of gray or some shit like that. The guys
Touch
getting their 50s or touch of
min plus
gray,
care, touch of gray.
touch of yellow is what we're looking for. when it comes to golf courses.
Where was it where you were hitting your putter on the green and it had that echo noise?
Oh, the thump. That was actually at Cabot. It was on the seventh hole. But yeah, there's nothing like the thump. But yeah, floor's the play when it comes to Q1. I think you're right about that one. And I'll roll on to Q2. So I'm in kind of an interesting situation here. I have the formal shoulder seasons. That's kind of hard to say fast. So like early Q2, there's a big difference between what you're looking at versus later Q2. Starting with early Q2, I mean, I would say that you're definitely getting into the more proper season for California. But what I would really focus on for the earlier part of Q2 is moving north of Florida, but by and large, still in the Southeast. I mean, you mentioned Aiken, certainly a lot of great stuff there. This is a great time to be in the Carolinas, Pinehurst on the coast. You're looking to get some golf in when the conditions are starting to come around, the grasses are starting to come together, but you're pre like really, really hot weather, right? I'll get into Q4. I think I have the funky ones here where there's a lot of attraction to playing golf in South Carolina, for example, in April, but it's very different what it presents to you from a condition standpoint of why it's attractive to play there in November, right? Like the dormant Bermuda versus as the grass is starting to come together is a very different thing. And so Q2, we're talking a little bit more weather conditions here than we are ground conditions. Not that the ground conditions aren't good, but I frankly think that a lot of parts of the country, the Southeast being the poster child of it, when you get that dormant Bermuda, I've gotten to where I like it more, the way that it plays. And I'll get into that more when I talk Q4. But as we move later on in Q2, this is definitely, you know, having spent a lot of time out there in both Northern and Southern, this is when California gets really, really good. You know, summer in Northern California is funky, like Pebble Beach, San Francisco. It can get just straight up cold in July and August. I still don't understand that force, but it's a weird thing. Like Q3 is really not your ideal time, but I've had a lot of really, really unbelievably good days, and particularly May, I would say, in California. You get into May, early June, whether it's northern or southern, not going to be too hot down south, and you're not going to get that really weird weather up north. I think of days at Paso Tiempo when they can just really get it dry and baked out mid-April, early May. You know, kind of same thing through San Francisco. You play Cal Club and SFGC. Those courses get really tight that time of year. And I think that's kind of their prime time. And as you move all the way to the end of Q2, now we're starting to introduce, you know, this is like very topical conversation because it's starting to plan out golf trips. Like that's kind of what we're doing here for people. Like we're still in that season where it's like, where can you play? And by and large right now, it's like maybe Dallas, there's some stuff in Texas. Texas is a little underrated on the golf scene. A lot of Florida, but like there's not that much that's on the menu just yet. But as we push kind of into the middle and later part of Q2, you know, New Jersey, Ohio, you're rolling the dice a little bit. So if you, you know, you do a second or third week of May sort of trip to a New Jersey, that's a shade aggressive. You could still get some cold stuff. But it's opening up a lot of possibilities at this point as you push into the late part of Q2. So I've kind of just laid out the full bevy here as opposed to really honing in on one thing in particular. But what I would say about Q2 is this is not my favorite conditions just in general. The conditions are good, but Q2 is the quarter of excitement, right? Like this is when stuff is opening up. And so you're slowly ticking off. You're going north and north and north, and you're just slowly ticking off one state at a time of where it's viable to start to play, where stuff is like actually opening in the states where courses do formally close. You know, you'll see opening dates May 1, whatever it is. But you know, the grasses are starting to come around and it's reasonable to get out there. It's not too cold. So Q2 is we're focused more on full blown weather conditions and what that means for the quarter of excitement, people getting back out there.
Love that. Moving on to Q3. If Q2 was the quarter of excitement, Q3 is the quarter of just way too many fucking options. I mean, I didn't know where to go here, right? It's like if you don't do the Northeast, you're doing the Northeast a complete disservice. And there are like seven or eight pockets inside of the Northeast that, you know, we could do our own show on. We can do an
Q3 is the quarter of triage. This is where can I not play in 3 months, you know?
That's exactly right. So it was like, you know, the Northeast, it was almost too big to handle. So I just threw that one out first. And then my second thought was like, man, it'd be really fun to do a Nebraska Sandhills trip. But, you know, walking around, especially, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but walking around in sandy terrain when the sun is just the closest to you, frankly, it's a lot on the eyeballs. And frankly, I'd rather play Sandhills as it's kind of rolling down for the year. I'd rather play, Landman as it's rolling down for the year. I'd rather play, Balleneil as it's rolling down for the year. So I moved aside and I went to a state that you spent some time in recently, a state that I want to spend a lot more time in, frankly. And that is pure Michigan. And it just feels like the perfect thing. Hike it all the way up north. I played Red Run Golf Club for the Western Junior, which is a really fun golf course. It's got some great history to it, a little bit treed in, and could afford a little bit of a restoration, but really, really great golf course. And kind of where I'm going here is fine fescue. I mean, that's all I'm interested in is some fine fescue. And not even arguably, it is the best turf in golf, and I will chase that anywhere it is. You just get some cooler weather, hopefully. I think, the heat of August, you could still keep it firmly under 90, and on some good days, I think, a good cloudy day, I think you can hang out in the 70s most of the time, and that's fun when the rest of the country is just scorching. So let's talk about some courses. What I like about pure Michigan is that it's got some really nice public offerings that, great architecture. You can fly somewhere, drive somewhere, and then really not have to do much logistically after that. In that bucket, you've got Arcadia Bluffs, North and South Course that are both really interesting. I've heard some great stuff about North. I've heard some great stuff about South, kind of that McRainer interpretation by Fry and Straka, who are doing some great stuff right now. I don't
I've
know
seen
as
Arcadia. I've
much.
actually not played there, but I stayed there last summer for a night, and it looks really cool.
They've
The
got an
breakfast is
interest
good. They've got away with bacon,
that that clubhouse looks
which
interesting. Tell me about the vibe of that place.
you mean the bacon? Yeah, it's nice and crispy, pretty thick, which is important. I want some thick bacon. I'm not about this like thin bacon. I want it thick but pretty crispy. Good texture. I feel like two slices is enough. Sometimes with bacon, like when it's really thin, I feel like I need like four of them, but this is like two. That gets me over the hump. They do a nice job with the eggs and their potato situation. They could crisp them a shade more, but good potatoes. Okay, apologies. It's just a great setting. The clubhouse is definitely a little bit weird. It almost feels like rural Virginia or something like that. It's got like homestead sort of vibes to it. But yeah, the terrain's amazing. Like it is truly on this, dare I say, bluff of dunes, and the golf holes are just kind of carved within it. And it is like if you drop someone in Michigan and they had no idea where they were, they'd think they're on the ocean. Like those lakes are so big. Like allegedly they call them the Great Lakes. So not surprisingly, they're reasonably large in size. Yeah, Michigan, that's a strong call. It does get a little cold for me.
Are you we're getting into barkitecture a little bit there with the bacon. You extra crispy? Is it extra crispy by
No, not
default?
extra. That's excessive. I just like it. Well, just crispy. I mean, I feel like that's the way, and maybe I shouldn't even say that I'm a crispy bacon person because I think that entails like north of expectation. I just want it to be kind of where you would think, but I think that it should be reasonably crispy. But again, thickness is crucial. Muirfield, you dropped Muirfield earlier, Muirfield Village, best bacon I've ever had. People talk about the milkshakes, thick. A little bit of crisp and peppery as hell, which is just like that is how you create alpha in the bacon world.
I don't even think I dropped Muirfield. I just think you wanted to talk about the
No, you did. You mentioned it when
milkshakes and
you did. You mentioned Muirfield
bacon. I
about
never
like
mentioned
tight
a word about
conditions. I
Ohio.
think you did. I'm
Okay.
pretty sure you did.
All
We'll
right,
go
I'll give
back.
you.
It's on tape. We got it all
No,
on tape.
I'll give you that. I was talking Candides, not bacon, though. Hey, moving on. Arcadia Bluffs, North and South, great option. Forest Dunes, I mean, another doke, dokes, plural, that I really want to see. And some great turf on sand, which you could probably say the same about Arcadia Bluffs, but Forest Dunes is kind of more that backcountry, more that rustic golf. And I have to say, in the trend of flared sand everywhere, which I like, I think I am learning to appreciate not just minimalism, but restraint more and more and more and more. And Forest Dunes to me just seems like restraint out the wazoo. And I would really want to experience that. Transitioning to private clubs really quickly, Kingsley Club is like, it's a top five on my hit list. Kingsley Club, Mike DeVries, just amazing bones on that property. Every hole looks interesting and valuable. And that's a course I really want to see. And then Crystal Downs, which has gotten a lot of love from the Tide podcast. If you haven't listened to Henry's article, and I say listened because it was done on audio, on video, and in written form. So if you haven't been there, go there.
And maybe the term is coverage, not love. I mean, we've discussed it, but I don't know. Maybe I left the love out. You'll have to go find out for yourself.
There you go. And go ahead and do that. That's it. I'm going to wrap up Q3 right here. Anything to bounce on Q3 before we go to Q4?
No, I liked the Michigan call. I like that you're going a little bit more specific than me rather than just like the shotgun method. Chicago, amazing, which is right across the one of those lakes from Michigan. I don't know which one it is. That'd be good trivia. Which lake is it that Chicago's on? It's Lake Michigan. No, Chicago sits on Lake Michigan.
They're all the Great Lakes. Just
It's
call
not
them all the Great
Superior. It's
Lakes.
not Erie. I think it's Michigan. I'm sticking with that. But Chicago, great stuff. I mean, the golf that I've played there has all been, kind of on the later side of Q3, and it's just, oh my goodness, August golf in Chicago is just like unbelievably good. Long Island is a joke in
It's a
Q3.
joke.
A literal joke. Philly is also quite comical in Q3. Just
New
like
Jersey,
those three cities. Well,
Maine.
not Long Island's not a city, but those regions. When you go there to those places, not only is it the architectural history, but golf was truly meant to be in those places from a conditioning standpoint. And I think as I move into Q4, it's important for us to kind of hash out here. There's a really big difference between manicuring and aesthetics and what we're referring to in conditions. Like conditions inform play as opposed to just like, oh, this looks nice. I'll never forget this one dinner I had with a fella here in Austin who will go fully unnamed, but made the quip that he's like, I just don't get it with St. Andrews. It's like all brown. And I went to Ireland right after and the grass is green and pretty. And I was just like,
Tough take.
oh, okay. But yeah, it's not about aesthetics. It's not about having perfectly manicured grass. I love the pod that you did with Michael Woods and the way that it all kind of described my understanding of it is he talked about the difference from a super standpoint of like they're grass growers and then there are like preparers for golf, right? Like there are people that are sitting here thinking like, how do I make this course such that it's going to play the best, that the golf ball is going to make its way across this course the best, as opposed to this thing's going to look really good, you know? Because I have talked about this 89 times on this podcast, but if it looks good but it doesn't play right, I really don't care. You know, if you have these like really cool template holes, and I mean you talked about Cabot Citrus and Stream Song, like imagine if those places are soft. It would just be the question all day would be nothing other than why. Why do we have all of this rolling topography, these big wild greens, if the ball just stops where it lands? You know, it's just not that interesting. But that's this whole conversation about conditions is where is it at different times of the year where the ball and the way that the game plays is going to react such that the conditions inform really interesting golf, not just to the eye, but in practice. So using that to kind of jump into Q4 here. As I mentioned, like we're in another shoulder season. So Chicago, Long Island, Philly, we're still at the beginning of Q4. Like October golf is pretty great in a lot of places. It's starting to get a little chilly. Like once you get into November in a lot of those places, it ain't happening. Like there's no, maybe there is, but you're not planning a trip unless you're crazy to Chicago Golf Club the second week of November. I should throw more public courses in there. You do a good job of that. I just go straight jackass button every single time. Shows where my mind is at. It's a tough scene. But yeah, Q4, the early part of it, you still have a lot of options. But as you push later, it's kind of that like early Q2 where you're starting to move your way up. Q4 is the complete opposite where you're starting to move your way down. You know, as we move into November and December, you're starting to think, okay, like where is it in the Southeast that I want to play now? Because, or you know, the southern half of the country. I don't like Arizona golf that much, so we haven't mentioned it today, and I'm not going to. But yeah, that's a great 365 a day a year sort of golf trip that you can take. Las Vegas, I'm a big Vegas fan. I actually really like Vegas. And I've always said this to people, man, this is a weird conversation we're getting into. You don't have to like drink in Vegas, you know? Like if you enjoy rolling the bones a little bit, getting some cards going, playing a little golf and good food,
Good
like
food.
Vegas can be enjoyed by anybody. I mean, you do not have to be the stereotypical Vegas goer. Apologies. Obviously Southern California all the way through, like this is a great time for it. But I have to hone in here on the dormant Bermuda, because I have had times in the Southeast in Q4 where, like Thanksgiving time, you sit there and say, this is getting really good, but it's going to be better in like 2 weeks because the grass is going to burn. You're like waiting. You're waiting for it to burn out more. You know, it's like a controlled burn. Like, are you familiar with a controlled burn when you burn
I
the
am.
underbrush in like a pine forest? It's like, you know, you can kind of still see some embers and all. And you're like, just wait a couple of weeks and it's all going to be burnt out and the ball's going to be running. And I mean, when you catch those good days, Carolinas, Georgia, Texas is another good example here. When you catch those good days where you get really good weather kind of all the way into December, it's, you know, mid 60s, maybe even 70, but you get the conditions that match more of what 45 or 50 degree weather would inform, that is when we're playing golf, because you get that firmness, you get a nice bounce, the turf interaction with the wedges, ooh, wedges, irons, all of that is just great. The greens are still really nice. You know, that's a thing about, you know, Q3. There's a very specific reason why you didn't mention anything in the Southeast, because this is where, even if you have Bermuda greens, they just, it's so damn hot. They have to water the hell out of it just to, you know, keep that grass from dying. Allegedly, that's pretty important. And that's just not the best stuff. Like, even if all the grass is perfectly green, and this kind of goes back to the whole manicure and aesthetic sort of conversation, it just doesn't play quite right. You know, I think about when you played the Ringer at Tree Farm last year. I'm
It was
sure it was
so
a total blast. I
fucking
wish I
hot.
could have been there, but it looked hot as hell. And I just feel pretty confident the way that golf course played, I'm sure it was still great, but not quite what you want. You know, Tree Farm, Palmetto, Old Barnwell, all of those places around Aiken, like when it gets dormant and the greens are firm and tight, to me, that is the ticket. And when you catch the really good weather days, you're just, I mean, there, it doesn't really get a whole lot better, for my money. So Q4 is another shoulder season, but it goes the opposite direction. Rather than working our way north, we're working our way back down south. But fortunately, the golf, like, it's almost a double haul when you think about it, because the golf is really good early Q4 when you're still up north, but the weather is just running up on you and it's going to be gone pretty soon. The golf down south, it not only does it start to cool down more and more and more, but as it cools down, the conditions for my money actually get even better. So Q4 has a little bit of magic to it when it comes to the golf scene. If you're not, you know, I don't like cold golf. We've been over that. But if it can stay reasonably warm, Q4 it might be the winner. It might be the winner in all of this.
You may be right. You mentioned this, and I think you nailed it with Q4, you know, dormant Bermuda, which is you want the early frosts in the beginning, late
Yes.
November, early December, and then you get these pockets of warmth in the Carolinas where you get to enjoy those conditions, but at a fairly nice temperature, like shorts and a quarter zip or pants and a quarter zip, like fuck, and it doesn't get any better than that. And it's all throughout the Carolinas. Like you mentioned Georgia, right? And I don't know why I have such a vendetta against Georgia. Like, obviously, it's got some good golf courses, but you know, North and South Carolina combined just crush Georgia, in terms of quantity. And you can just get some awesome pockets of weather in there. And so that's for my money. Dormant Bermuda with sandy turf. And interesting architecture to pair with those conditions. Fine fescue, you know, when it's not too hot out, but very well summertime. And then Northeast. I think what we're getting at here is that East Coast, is far superior conditions wise. And if anybody wants to clap back at that, get on a Mudball Monday or get in the DMs and we can hash that out there.
Hey, one quick comment on Georgia. You know, it's interesting because I kept throwing it in just as like a sidebar, but I feel completely the same way. The Carolinas pound for pound just absolutely crush it. But it's deeper than that. Like Georgia has clearly a small handful of really great golf courses. Let's set aside Sea Island. Let's set aside, we talked about Cuscoquilla with Derek Duncan on the pod there. If you haven't heard that one, go listen to that.
Great pod, by the way. Love
There's
that.
some really good stuff in there, but elephant in the room, there are, unless I'm forgetting something, I've heard Fields Club is really good. That's a different thing altogether. But unless I'm missing something, there are three like banger golf courses in Georgia. And not only are they all private, they are like hyper private. And one of them is hyper, to the power of infinity private between Peachtree, Augusta, and Ahoopee. And so, like, yes, it's extremely top heavy. There's some really great stuff, but like, no one hardly gets to see it. And so that's the weird thing about Georgia as opposed to the Carolinas. Yes, the Carolinas has some private and like quite private stuff, you might say, but there's nothing in the Carolinas that's as private as even the least private of those three in Georgia,
Yes.
as far as I'm concerned. And so it's a really interesting conversation, because it stacks up to a lot of states in certain metrics. But if we're talking about like, has more than 1% of the population seen the golf course, it might get like some of the lower marks in that regard. So it's a weird one.
It is a weird one. They also get more clay. But hey, we're getting long in the tooth. Mudball Monday. Everybody have an awesome week. We've got content on content making our way to you this week. So keep your eyes peeled. And if you don't, we'll make sure you hear about it elsewhere. Mudball Monday, 125. We'll see you later. Peace.